Cabrera on his way to third. The throw into left field. Cabrera's got a stolen base, and he's going to score.
Look at him.
That's going to make his night in every highlight show in baseball.
Miguel Cabrera catches the Royals off guard last night, steals third on a really poor throw. MJ Melendez, the rookie catcher, in the left field. Royals with a multitude of errors, three in the seventh inning, and basically threw the game away last night against the Tigers as the Royals fall 7-5. They led early 1-0. As we mentioned, though, things fell apart there in the seventh. Bobby Witt with a couple errors, Melendez with an error. So how great the young players were the other day? Well, not so good last night when it came to defense, and Cabrera ended up scoring on the play. Royals now 34-53. Tigers now 37-51. Two teams will finish up their series this afternoon at 1:10. Brady Singer has been very solid since coming back up. 3-3 ERA at 4.25 on the hill for the boys in blue as the Royals. Well, this is fun stuff. Michael A. Taylor has now gone four games without playing center field for the Royals. He's DH'd once. He sat three times. Well, what would be the correlation here? Well, he came in as a position player to pitch in a 13-1 blowout loss to the Guardians, threw 37 pitches, threw at 1.94 miles an hour. He is a trade candidate, and now apparently perhaps the Royals messed up his arm. And that would, and so there are some people saying that's a fireable offense for Mike Matheny and the Royals. First of all, I know Cody, if Cody's listening, he put a tweet out there and asked my thoughts on it. I didn't really want to get into it on Twitter. I didn't think that was the forum to do it. That's because we've got an hour, so you got plenty of time here instead of trying to explain it on Twitter. So if Cody's listening, here's my thoughts on it. I don't think it's a fireable offense. That's overreaction from a fan base that wants Matheny out because somehow the fan base believes that Matheny is the reason the Royals suck. And he's not. Okay? Now, Mike Matheny, is he the greatest manager in the world? I'm going to tell you no. But then again, there's only one person that's the greatest manager in the world, and I don't even know who that is. But Mike Matheny had success in St. Louis. He had success. He won division titles, all right? He made the playoffs. He won a lot of games. Now, he also had some issues towards the end of his tenure in St. Louis. Whether he's going to learn from his mistakes in Kansas City, I don't know. Ned Yost learned from his mistakes with the Brewers when he got canned late in the season and they're in the playoff push. And Ned's talked about that openly, about how he learned some things from that, what happened there. And people thought the same thing Ned Yost when he got, oh, well, look what happened in Milwaukee. And Ned turned out okay. In fact, he'll be in the Royals Hall of Fame, and if there was a Mount Rushmore of managers and coaches in Kansas City, we know that Ned Yost probably would be on there, whether you like it or not. Even though he had a poor record overall, he took one for the team so many years because he knew, hey, we are a small market team. We have to build to get where we are. We're going to have to lose a lot of games. And if you're a manager that's selfishly worried about your overall record, then you should never take a job with a small market team, ever. Ever. And Mike Matheny's put himself out there. I mean, there's only so many Major League Baseball manager jobs. And the Royals wanted him, and they got him, and he's a former Cardinal, which still hurts. But Matheny is not the problem why the Royals are losing so much, in my opinion. Is he part of the problem? Maybe he's part of it. I don't know. I don't know if the players respect him or not. It seems like they do. There's talk that maybe they quit on him at one point. I don't think they have. I think a lot of people out there look for a scapegoat, and the easiest scapegoat is one of two people. In football, it's the head coach and the quarterback. All right, basketball, it is the coach or the star player. And in baseball, it's usually the manager or a pitching coach or a hitting coach. It's one of the coaches. It's usually in baseball, there really isn't a scapegoat when it comes to players, per se. It's usually the manager or the general manager. And this is what happens when you're 34-53, is that Mike Matheny is going to be immediately, oh, Michael Taylor's hurt. Well, that's Matheny's. He was an idiot. He left him in there 37 pitches. Maybe he was. At that moment in time, maybe he was an idiot. Or maybe he's thinking, listen, Michael Taylor's pitching fairly well right now to get through this. That'd be great. Saves my bullpen because I'm trying to win the next day. I mean, Michael Taylor might have thrown 16 pitches and his shoulder would have bothered him. We don't know. It doesn't look good when he threw 37 and he threw 94. I'm sure Matheny probably told him, don't try to throw 94, and he might have done it anyway. Are we to say or no? So my thought is it something that you put in the holster as ammunition against Mike Matheny when you want him fired? Sure. Does it mean it's a fireable offense? No. There have been managers that have overdone their pitchers left and right. See Dusty Baker. I mean, there are guys and managers in the game today that actually, believe it or not, have a little bit of old school. And I'm going, maybe you should be able to throw more than 100 pitches and go more than six innings, which is a crazy concept. And I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday coming back from Clay Center that baseball is so different because now you throw six innings and it's a great start. You don't see guys go seven, eight, nine innings. You don't see guys, once they hit 100 pitches, it's like, oh my gosh, we got to get them out of there. Michael Taylor threw 37 pitches and we're freaking out because, well, his shoulder's bothering him. Maybe it was something going on before he even pitched. I don't know. Now, if he did have that and he still was pitching, then that's probably on the manager, unless that, the player didn't tell him, which sometimes that happens too. Is it a fireable offense? No, in my opinion. There are probably many other things that a manager can do to get fired. I'll tell you, a fireable offense would be if you have a star starting pitcher, or let's say Brady Singer, and Brady Singer throws 138 pitches in a game. That ruins a young pitcher, part of the future. To me, that's fireable offense. Michael A. Taylor, hey, nice defensive player, gold glove guy. It's not like the Royals are going to get a ton for him anyway on the market, in my opinion. Their best trade bid is Benintendi. So is it a fireable offense? I don't think it is. I think that's just, you know, fans wanting change just to have change. And I'll say it again, and Dusty knows what I'm going to say because I say this probably every other week on this show. You want to fire Mike Matheny. Terrific. Who are you going to make a phone call first to replace him with? Because fans never have that solution. Hardly ever. You know, on this show, when we say somebody should be fired, or we think they should be let go, or it's time to part ways, we're going to, 9 times out of 10, have a solution. For instance, Cal Eldred, I think it's okay for him to go. He's the pitching coach of the Royals. I don't see significant progress with the young pitching core. I mean, maybe there's a little bit, maybe not. The guy that seems to have more success is the guy at AAA pitching coach. He's worked with these kids longer than Eldred anyway. There's a rapport there, a relationship. I would be tempted to go ahead and have him bring him on up and let Cal go and see what this guy's got for the rest of the year. And if he does a good job and we see improvements, then he's our pitching coach for the future. Notice I had a solution. I had a guy in mind, all right? I didn't just say, fire Cal Eldred and, well, who's your pitching coach? I don't care. Dusty Dynas. I don't care. Anybody but Cal Eldred. Well, that's you can't run a team like that. You can't. That's the fanatic and fan, you know? That's part of it. But when you sit here, as I said, when you wanted to fire Ned Yost in 2014, I remember having the same conversation 8 years ago. Okay, great. Who's going to take the job and who do you want? All right? The Joe Girardi wasn't coming to Kansas City. All right? Buck Showalter wasn't coming to Kansas City. They're the names that were thrown out at the time, I remember. But we all knew they ain't going to come to Kansas City. Well, okay. You want to fire Mike Matheny. You think he messed up a center fielder that's a light-hitting center fielder that's got it's an outstanding defensive player. You want to fire Mike Matheny because he threw too many pitches in a blowout game because he was trying to preserve his bullpen. I hear you. I understand your angst and you're upset and you want another piece of ammunition to throw onto the fire. I get it. Great. You're the GM. You're going to fire Mike Matheny because he apparently maybe ruined Michael Taylor for trading him for something. We believe. We don't know this for sure. But let's say you're the GM and you just know it. Great. Who's your first phone call to? Come on, fans. Come on, Royals, whatever you want to call yourselves, Royals Nation. Come on, Al. You want Mike Matheny fired? Give me a name. I am so tired of the laziness of fans, and I know it's been this way for years, and I get it. But when you just throw something out and go, this is a fireable offense, great, you want to fire him. Super. Who are you going to hire? Somebody's got to be the manager. If you tell me the third base coach is an up-and-coming guy, I think he should be a manager, fine. I might totally think you're crazy, but at least you gave me a name or a person. Well, you think Whit Merrifield's going to be the manager now because he's hurt? What is your plan? See, when you run an organization, you have to have a plan. When you run a company, you have to have a plan. Trust me, the Royals have a plan. Now, we might not agree on the plan, but they at least have a plan. I'm going to side and go with a guy and work with a person that has a plan well before I'm going to work with somebody going, well, we need to fire everybody and clean house. Great. Who are you going to hire? I don't know. to hell with you. I'm going with the guy with a plan. Because you're on a ship and you're not steering it. You're just hoping it doesn't hit an iceberg. Whereas I'm with a guy that's got a plan. Well, you see, we can take this route to avoid the iceberg. Now, granted, there might be something else I hit, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to miss the big iceberg. Or I could go with the person saying, I'm just going to close my eyes and wing it. I'm going to go with the guy with a plan every time. I will go with Dayton Moore over any fan that's out there right now. Now, I'm not saying I'm a big Dayton Moore fan right now with the way the organization is, but at least there's some kind of plan. A fan typically has no plan. It's knee-jerk reaction, scream at the top of your lungs and say, Mike Matheny needs to be fired because he threw Michael A. Taylor 37 pitches. And for all we know, it might not have any correlation, the two at all. So do you think it's a fireable offense? Do you think Mike Matheny really screwed up and hurt the Royals so much by Michael A. Taylor throwing 37 pitches, which we once again can't confirm that's why his shoulder's bothering him? You could certainly connect the dots.
No. I mean, if you did that for everything like this that goes on during a season, like you feel like you rode this guy too long, you should be – I mean – Trey Hillman would have lost his job real fast.
He should have lost it right away after Gil Mesh.
Right? I mean,
$55 million contract.
Yeah, I mean, you can't like overreact to things like that, like on anything like this that happens, because you'd be looking for a new manager probably three or four times a season,
more than that, probably.
You know, depending on how much you think that these things are happening, and there's things happening behind the scenes that we don't even know about. Like, there's probably. A manager's probably been the reason for some other injuries that we don't even know that, right?
Sure.
Like, they just, because it's just part, it was part of the game, but maybe they had something nagging that we didn't even know about, and then they got hurt worse because the manager kept playing them in a certain spot or did this or that.
Or the flip side, his guy's hurt, he knows he's hurt, the guy's too proud and says, I'm playing no matter what, and the manager doesn't get to say, no, you need to sit.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So there's a lot of that stuff that goes on that you just don't even know. So right. No, it's not. That's not a fireable offense. That's not. I don't think anybody should run an organization like that to be like, oh, you made this one mistake here, you're gone.
Right.
I mean, I know they're losing, and I know that people are frustrated with the way the season's gone, the record, and things like that. But at this point of the year,
there's no point.
It's like, what are you doing when you're 19 games below 500 after last night? It's like, what are you actually accomplishing by saying, hey, we need to fire Mike Matheny right now? The season's not going anywhere anyway. So I'm one that's like, don't change stuff right in the middle of everything. Just get through this bad season, and if you feel like you need to make that move at the end of the year, then do it.
Sure.
But these things are not like, I mean, yeah, if he gets caught betting on baseball or, you know, like things like that that are legit, like, okay, you can't do that, see you later type deals, you know, then, yeah, I get it if you want to fire somebody during the season. But these are moves that managers have to make every day. They have to figure things out every time they go out there. And it's like, what decision would you make there that would have been better than what Mike Matheny did, right? Like, that's what I asked the person that says it's a fireable offense, right? Mm-hmm. And if he goes out there, and like most guys that are coming in as position players are not trying to burn it. They're not trying to throw 94, right?
No.
Like, when you see Brett Phillips go out and pitch for the Devil Race, he is like 40 to 50 mile an hour, he's good. He's just having fun out there because he knows that's what his job is right there. It's just to get through the game. Mm-hmm. It's not to, I mean, you're already down 11-0. Or 11-1, whatever it was when Taylor came in. And it's like, you're not out there to get guys out. You're just out there to eat time and innings. And if you throw 37 pitches and you just toss them in there, you're probably not going to have an issue.
Right.
So I would guess
94, 93.
If he's throwing that fast and he's not warmed up to do that, that's not his job.
He was showing off.
Yeah. And so maybe you should put a little bit of that on Michael A. Taylor for being like, maybe I should have relaxed a little bit out here and just kind of laid back a little bit since this is not my position.
No, I agree with you. We'll see what all happens here, Michael A. Taylor, and whether or not they're able to trade him and get anything for him or what, with the trade with the Braves to get Drew Waters, who, by the way, had a triple in his first at-bat last night at Triple A Omaha. You know, they would like him to be the center fielder. Maybe Michael A. Taylor turns into, if they don't trade him, he ends up being a defensive replacement slash plays one or two days a week, pinch runner type of thing, pinch hitter. and he could still serve a role on the team. It's not like the Royals are spending tons of money on him, mm-hmm. and it was a one-year deal anyway, but you like to get something for him, and if he's hurt, obviously you can't get anything for him. Of course, Whit Merrifield, if you were thinking about trading him, now he's hurting, so that's not good timing at all either. If you're thinking about trading him, although I don't think the Royals really were, and I don't think there's a lot of offers out there either. Time for a Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot. And I already know what happened to the Cubs last night, but I'll let Jason share it with you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they lost 4-2 to the Baltimore Orioles.
No sponsor today?
Well, yeah, it's brought to you by Pizzeria Uno.
Ah, thank you. Pizzeria Uno.
Now that I say good. I think I might have already used that one.
Did you use that one?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're recycling sponsors already. That's okay.
Yeah.
We can do whatever. It sounds good, though.
It does.
They lost 4-2 to the Orioles. The Orioles are now back to .500. Last year, at this point, they were 40. Or last year, they were 44-93 at one point. This year, they're 44-44. Okay, so this goes back to the Royals here. We've talked about these teams. Why is it the Royals have stunk since 2015 and haven't had a winning record since then? We went through every team in baseball. The only two exceptions were the Pirates, I think, was the main exception. And everybody else has been able to retool, redo it in shorter periods of time. Here are the Baltimore Orioles. Last year, horrible, horrible, horrible team. Worse than the Royals. And now, in the toughest division in baseball, they're back to .500. They won, I think, 9 in a row or something. It's the first time a team has lost as many games as the Orioles did last year, and the next year win 9 in a row, and they beat the Cubs last night. And right away, you know what Royals skeptics say? And I understand it. What are they doing right, and we're doing wrong? I'm going to tell you, it's pretty simple. One, they got more pitching.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to pitching again. And there's a former Royal that's on their staff that closed the game last night who is the only all-star for the Baltimore Orioles, and the Royals gave up on him. And that's Jorge Lopez. And that's a guy the Royals, once again, he almost had a no-hitter one of his first starts with the Royals. Looked like a really good trade, and the Royals couldn't get the best out of him. And once again, why can't the Royals make guys better with their pitchers? No, whether it's Jorge Lopez, who was young, seemed like a really good talent, is going to be a part of this rotation for a while, looked great first couple starts, like I said, almost a no-hitter, and then regresses to the point where you don't get really basically anything for him. And now he's an all-star with Baltimore. That's an indictment of the Royals organization. I'm sorry. Maybe bad luck. I don't know. But
I talked about that when you were gone on Monday when we were going through the all-star roster. And it's like the Orioles are doing something different with him, too.
Sure,
right?
They are.
Like he's not a starter with
right.
the Orioles.
Well, the Royals used Lopez in relief, too.
Yeah. And I think if maybe they would have kept him in on that role, maybe it would have been a little bit better for Jorge with the Royals. I don't think he did terrible as a relief pitcher with the Royals, if I remember right. But it was just there was no consistency. It's kind of like a little bit like a Chris Bubich, right? Like you could get through maybe the first couple times mm-hmm. through the order, but then things started going south for you.
Absolutely.
And that just seems like that's a never-ending cycle with the Royals as far as their starters are concerned. But, when you go – and I think scenery, different scenery helps guys too. And so, obviously, that's all of that's helped Jorge Lopez for sure.
Yeah, well, and it's great that he made the All-Star team. He just liked it to be with the Royals, but that didn't work out. All right, the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race is tonight. Dusty's got a lot of information on that, and we're going to hear from one of the co-promoters.
Yeah, many of the drivers are going to make their way to Beloit tonight for the 11th running of the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race. Cars and Stars, the USAC NAS Energy Drink National Midget Series, returning to Solomon Valley Raceway in honor and memory of Concordia native Chad McDaniel, who lost his life in the USAC National Midget Race in Knoxville, Iowa in 2009. So they've had this event. They did take a couple years off in 19 and 20, got it back going last year in Beloit, and it's obviously one of the bigger events for the area and the biggest event really in USAC in Kansas, because it's the only race in the state of Kansas that USAC runs. So we had a chance to talk to Nathan LaBarge, as Wade said, is a co-promoter of the event, and he kind of talks about how big this event is for not only Beloit, but for the family, and how huge it is to have this the one only race in Kansas in Beloit.
It's a huge deal for us and everybody involved. I know the family. Everybody appreciates it. You know, I just don't think that a lot of people maybe understand how big of a deal that USAC Racing is, and that this is the only stop they make in Kansas a year. If you're into any open wheel racing at all, this is going to be one of the best shows you see. That boy track's just, you know, perfect for these guys, and they all love being there, and then they put on one heck of a show.
And Chad McDaniel Memorial Race starts tonight. We'll have gates open at 5 o'clock. The hot laps start at 6:30. Qualifying at 7. Racing to start approximately 7:30 here tonight. It's $20 for adults, $5 for students, high school age and younger. All access pit passes can be purchased for $35 at the pit gate or the main grandstand gate. And, you know, talking about this USAC series, one of the things like that Nathan was mentioning there is how big it really is. And this really is your last stepping stone to get to the NASCAR, whether it's the truck races or the second circuit or the NASCAR Cup. Christopher Bell, who's eighth in point standings right now in NASCAR, won this race, the Chad McDaniel, in 2013 and 2017. So they have great race car drivers there. They have great teams and guys that really put a lot of time and effort into it. And some of the best, obviously, dirt track racers in the country and probably in the world are going to be in Beloit tonight. So it's always exciting to have that in your backyard. Again, the only time you can see them in Kansas. So get on out there tonight. Again, the gates open at 5 o'clock, Solomon Valley Raceway, for the 11th Chad McDaniel Memorial Race tonight in Beloit.
That looks like everything will work out pretty much weather-wise, I believe. I think there's a slight chance of
Chase Elliott came last year and it got rained out, so he didn't actually get a race.
I remember that.
Had to do it the next night. They got it going. But yeah, it was that's always something you got to take into account in this state.
Absolutely. Let's talk some Chiefs football for a moment. It's an interesting situation. The Chiefs franchise tagged left tackle Orlando Brown. Of course, they gave a first-round pick to get him from the Ravens before last season. He performed fairly well. He had his struggles there for a while. There's a stalemate between the Chiefs and Orlando Brown, and it centers on Brown seeking to reset the market at upwards of $25 million a year. Chiefs seem to be unwilling to go there despite their strong feeling for him. The Chiefs maintain they love Orlando Brown Jr. and want him to be the left tackle of the future. Brown wants to be the highest paid left tackle in the NFL. The Chiefs are willing to pay top left tackle money, but unwilling to completely reset the position market. Also, the Chiefs have flexibility to use the tag in 2023 as well with their future cap situation. Now, what's interesting is Orlando Brown, smartly, as most players do, when your franchise tag, you don't sign it. Okay? And so when you don't sign it, you're not under contract. So the Chiefs obviously have control of him, but yet technically he hasn't signed the franchise tag. So it's money that's against the cap, but technically it's not. So let me explain this. It counts against the cap because if Orlando Brown plays, it obviously it's going to be cap money. But if Orlando Brown doesn't play or the Chiefs end up not working out a deal, then obviously they've got to trade him or get rid of him in some way, okay? And so that would help them on their cap. They also can play hardball and say, listen, man, you're in the prime of your career. We're tagging you this year. You play, perform again another year, and then we will promise you we won't tag you again, and we will work out a long-term deal. Now, they might have already said that here since they traded for him and said that. But, you know, I know left tackle is important. Don't get me wrong. And the Chiefs have a quarterback that is one of the highest paid players in the league that you want to keep healthy for a very long time. Orlando Brown, I defended him early in the year because I think it takes a while to get used to how far Mahomes drops back. I thought there was some sacks that Mahomes walked himself into because he goes so far back. Orlando Brown's not used to that. And we talked about Orlando Brown also got to adjust to playing left tackle. He played left tackle before, but not as much as he would have liked in Baltimore. They were more run-dominated offense, and Chiefs are more of a RPO offense and throwing the football, Mahomes scrambling, moving around, improvising. And so that isn't easy for an offensive lineman. Usually as offensive lineman, you'd rather know where your quarterback is. And it's easier to protect a quarterback when he is a drop-back passer. Because you know Tom Brady isn't going to be running around for his life or Peyton Manning. You know that we got to form a pocket around him. Whereas Mahomes, sometimes, you don't know where he's going. And he goes, and then there's a hold called on the offensive line on the edge. You're like, well, why did that guy hold? That's horrible. Fire that guy. Well, no, Mahomes went where they didn't expect him to go, and they had to hold, or Mahomes was going to light up like a Christmas tree. And so you love the improvisational skills of Patrick Mahomes. It's fun to watch, and he makes some great plays out of it, no question. But for an offensive lineman, it's not easy because you're trying to protect your quarterback, but if he doesn't stay home where I'm supposed to protect him, now I got to move his location or move the protection, as you would say. And so Orlando Brown overall last year, I didn't think was worthy of $25 million a year in money. The last half of the season, he played better. I do think if the Chiefs would run the ball more often, that would help Orlando Brown in that offensive line, because I think they can smash mouth, play football, and run the ball. And maybe they'll be a little bit more dedicated this year. I hope so, but I just don't count on it because that's Andy Reid coaching. So the question is, the Chiefs did not want to reset the market and pay $30 million for Tyreek Hill. And I was one of the first ones on a very small island at the beginning, and then a lot of people started to swim and join me on the island after the fact, because nobody wanted to think objectively when it happened. It was, we talked about earlier, knee-jerk freak-out reaction. Oh my God! Tyreek's gone! What are we going to do? Because he didn't expect it. That's why you freaked out. If you would have just calmed down, let things go, like I know I did, let all the reaction go out there on social media, and you can read it. It doesn't mean you have to reply to it. Then let it soak in for a little bit of time, which it did. And then we talked about it the next day on the show, and we all agreed that it's probably the best thing for the Chiefs. With the money tied up in Mahomes, the money tied up in Chris Jones, and you're not going to bring back Tyrann Mathieu, which is probably smart. You probably don't want to pay Tyreek Hill $30 million a year. You got to look at the future. So the Chiefs got a pretty good haul for Tyreek Hill. They saved their money on the cap. And some people said part of the reason why the Chiefs didn't want to reset the market with Hill is that they knew they wanted to give a long-term deal to Orlando Brown. That was part of the equation. But now here we are. Tyreek Hill is probably the most electrifying wide receiver in the league, the fastest guy maybe in the league, the guy with the biggest plays in his career, the most big plays in his career in the league. And the Chiefs didn't reset the market $30 million a year, and I'm happy with that. I'm cool with that. Now, if you want to be that fickle fan, 8 weeks into next year, the Chiefs often struggling, you'll suddenly say, oh, I told you it was a horrible trade. No. I will always stand by what I'm saying. I think for the future of the Chiefs, that was the right move. But now here we are, I would call part two. Do you give Orlando Brown, apparently the Chiefs are probably going to have to at least give him 2021, a year, to be the left tackle for the considerable future, which is a very key spot. On offense, there's really two major spots in regards to the highest paid players typically. On the offensive line, the most premium spot is left tackle. And you've usually got a receiver gets paid well now, and you've got a quarterback. And you're foolish to give any running back tons of money. See Christian McCaffrey, Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott. I could go on and on about that. Larry Johnson. So the guys that get paid the most are left tackle, quarterback, and usually a receiver and a pass rusher. Those are the four spots that are premium, wouldn't you say?
Yep. Yeah.
And I think you can get away without paying tons of money for a wide receiver.
I was just going to say, like, receiver's not even on my radar compared to the other three that you mentioned.
But there's receivers getting $28, $30 million.
They're getting it, yeah. But for me as a, I don't as think a you have fan to or somebody that's looking at it, I think that receivers are a little overvalued by a lot of the teams in the NFL.
Do you think receiver is easier to replace than left tackle?
Yes. Yeah, if you have a really good one. Like if you have a left tackle that's dominant and outstanding, I say receiver's easier to replace.
Okay, so based on that logic, then the Chiefs should give Orlando Brown the money well before Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
Because the Chiefs, if they believe, as you just said, if the Chiefs believe that he is a guy who is very young yet, that can be a really good, and I say really good, I mean, if you're going to give $25 million a year and reset the market, he's going to have to be really, really good or great or outstanding at left tackle for the next probably 4 or 5 years, not just 1 year. Then what does that do for the Chiefs down the line? Does it tie their hands financially with the cap? There's supposed to be bigger caps coming down the line with the bigger money coming and TV deals and all this other stuff. But this is what the Chiefs were prepared for and were thinking when they let Tyreek Hill go, because, one, they got a lot of draft picks. They saved a lot of money by not signing Tyreek to that big contract. And the big thought was they've got to have room for Orlando Brown. Well, now we're in this conversation. Orlando Brown may not report to training camp if he doesn't have a deal. They got 3 days to get this deal done, I guess, from what I read before he has to make some decisions on the tag. I don't understand all the little details. I haven't taken the time to go through all of it yet. But the bottom line is we're getting closer and closer to they need to get a deal done, or he's going to probably need to play under the tag. Or he's got to hold out. And then what do the Chiefs do? So it seems like they're a ways apart. And I don't think the Chiefs, as I said, want to reset the market left tackle at $25 million a year. But aren't they a little bit, I mean, they're kind of in a tough spot, aren't they? Do they have somebody that's ready to go at left tackle? I mean, you can move Tooney over there for a period of time, you know, but do you really? I think Orlando Brown has some leverage here.
Well, sure. I mean, when anybody that's on the tag has leverage, right? Like if they're trying to get something better, they can do what they want with that, you know? But I think they might have a little bit more because the Chiefs might not have an answer here. But it's tough for me because I don't think Orlando Brown is worthy of resetting the market at left tackle
because he's not
been there enough. Like he was a right tackle for the most part in Baltimore. And so, yeah, I mean, he had to play there based on injury, but the Ravens said, no, you're not our left tackle. We're going to go, whoever was playing it here before you that was injured is going to get that job back.
Right.
Right? And so it's like, okay, so we paid a right tackle, left tackle. We're paying a right tackle, left tackle money because we feel like he's good enough to be a left tackle, but has he done it enough to prove himself to be the highest paid left tackle in the NFL? I don't think so. And I don't think anybody would believe that if they watched the Chiefs play, right? Like he's very good. And he obviously, I think, like you said, he made improvements throughout the season as it went on and you could trust him a little bit more. And he probably trusted his quarterback a little bit more and what he needed to do in that regard. But then you're stuck because who's the answer if you don't give them the money, right? Like, who do you have? Is there anybody you can get? Because this is not we can wait until free agency type of deal. If he is really, really frustrated and doesn't want to play under the tag, then you need to find a left tackle right away. And you don't have that on your roster right now. So it is a little bit more leverage probably for Orlando Brown to make a deal, but there's no reason the Chiefs have to say we're going to give you the money just because – they don't have something. They might try to work something out themselves and put somebody there that they feel can do the job.
Here's more specific details on the situation here. The Chiefs and Orlando Brown are not expected to come to an agreement on a long-term extension before Friday. Friday is that deadline. The offensive tackle is likely to hold out of training camp. Brown and his representation have spoken to the Chiefs in recent days regarding extension, but the parties are nowhere close to a deal. If an extension isn't reached, Brown is expected to sit out the start of camp and potentially all of training camp, and even week one would be in question. Brown, who played left tackle with Chiefs last season, is wanting top-of-the-market money as high as $23 to $25 million a year. The Chiefs' offers have been consistent with top money for a right tackle, which is $19 million a year, which he was a right tackle before he came to Kansas City, but he wants to be a left tackle. The Chiefs have applied the franchise tag to Brown, who has yet to sign it, and the deadline for tag players to sign long-term deals is Friday at 3 o'clock. If Brown were to play 2022 on the franchise tag, he would receive $16.2 million, be a one-year deal. Should Brown hold out and continue refusing to sign his tag tender, he would not be subject to any fines because, as I said earlier, he technically is not under contract. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, there is a sense of urgency because the Chiefs believe they are Super Bowl contenders, and they are. Of course, they are. They've been the AFC title game 4 years in a row, and losing Tyreek Hill doesn't mean they're not Super Bowl contenders. I love how people have freaked out about that. A lot of really good players still on the Chiefs team and future Hall of Famers on this team as well. But yes, would it be better with Orlando Brown at left tackle? Absolutely. So there is urgency, I think, for both sides because, listen, you're risking, if you're Orlando Brown, you are taking a risk here by not signing your tag at the end. You're also saying also the Chiefs are going, well, like you just said, what do we got at left tackle if, for some reason, Orlando Brown holds out for a long period of time. And then if you miss all of training camp and go into season, we've seen this with guys that hold out sometimes, they end up getting hurt. They're not in shape. They get their big deal, and then they get hurt. And I'm with you. I want the Chiefs to play a little hardball here, and I'm guessing they'll probably end up agreeing on $22 to $23 million instead of $25 million and somewhere in the middle, and eventually it'll get done. But to me, Orlando Brown is not a dominant left tackle. I don't think of him as one of the best left tackles in the league, and I don't think he played like it last year, and that's why I hesitate and actually cringe when I hear $25 million a year. But at the same time, I also cringe who the heck's going to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes if we got nobody in place that can do it. I think Joe Tooney could do it for a little while. Mm-hmm. But there's nobody long-term that could do it left tackle that Orlando Brown could. And that's where the leverage comes in for Orlando.
Yeah, or Joe Tooney could probably do it for the whole year, but he wouldn't be as good as Orlando Brown.
No, and then you heard another spot.
And then the left guard isn't as good as Joe Tooney. So, yeah, you definitely want Brown in there. And most of the time these things work out. They're both going to play chicken for a while. And most of the time these things do work out. Now, whether it's a couple of weeks before the season or worst case scenario even after week one, but for the most part I think they do work out. I think it's probably going to be, like you say, somewhere in the middle, 21-22, somewhere in there. Get him in, get him ready to go, and you hope he's ready to go and keeps Patrick Mahomes healthy and all those guys are good to go the second half of the season for sure, and I know you got to get to the second half, but I think my guess is it works out and it's going to be somewhere $21-22 million and maybe 23 to help Orlando out there a little bit. And we'll see. But I think for the most part, they work out.
I think a deal get done too, but I don't want to see them giving him $25 million or resetting the market.
No,
I just don't. And so we'll see which side will flinch first. That's what always happens in contract negotiations. I think most of us expected this to go down the wire anyway, all along. Even when they traded for him, I think everybody knew that this was more likely going to take place. Let's see here. Found it. A source says, unless Pac-12 schools make a panic move, I wouldn't be surprised if the Pac-12 goes the whole season before the future of the conference is resolved. There is no rush. There is no rush. I disagree, but okay. Big 12 Media Days getting started, and this is the new commissioner, I believe. Let me see. We'll play this.
There is no doubt the Big 12 is open for business. We will leave no stone unturned to drive value for the conference. Just as I pledged to the board, we will be bold and humble, aggressive and thoughtful, and innovative and creative. All in an effort to position the conference in a way that not only grows the Big 12 brand and business, but makes us a bit more contemporary. Although there will be challenges ahead, Bob has left me an incredible foundation to build upon.
So that's your new commissioner. That's why they hired the guy. They want him to be aggressive. I mean, listen, right away, he's a lot more assertive than the previous two commissioners right off the bat with that statement. Like, he's saying, we're open for business. We are going to be aggressive. We are going to we're creative, we're innovative. Listen, this is probably exactly what the Big 12 needed. And if we look 10 years from now and the Big 12 is still a viable conference, you might point to the hiring of that guy.
You can tell who's holding the better cards right now. Pac-12 is saying, we're in no rush. Big 12 say, we're open for business. That's because the Big 12 probably has the advantage right now in trying to get some things done. The Pac-12, I don't think, has a lot of choices on their own. Therefore, they can say things, publicly like, there's no rush. Because, you're not getting your first choice. Pac-12's not in the driver's seat of this right now. So they, of course they can say there's no rush because nobody's really in a hurry to join the Pac-12 right now. So it's not their decision that it's not a rush. It's other people's decision that they're not in a hurry.
The new commissioner said on the Big 12 adding schools, nothing is imminent. And then on his reaction when he found out that USC and UCLA were going to the Big 10, he said, and I quote, I was excited by it in many respects because I saw there was an opportunity. And that I like to hear because that's what the Big 10 and the SEC are doing all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, Oklahoma and Texas, we saw an opportunity, went after it. Oh, Oklahoma State ain't happy. There's opportunity. Big 10, USC, UCLA, ooh, there's opportunity. We jump all over it. The Big 12 has always, for the most part, sat on their hands and been reactive instead of proactive. BB was the worst. And the Pac-12 is Larry Scott. Mark Johnson, voice of the Buffalo, is talking about how horrible he was and why they're where they are today. It's because of his leadership or lack thereof. Bowlesby was good in some aspects, but how you have no idea Texas Oklahoma is bolting your conference, to me, is just, that's not cool at all. And puts you in a tough spot. And I think as commissioner, you should be aware that there's rumblings of that. I like what I'm hearing. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be a great commissioner,
yeah,
because that's all talk. But I do like the fact that he, instead of being the hunted, you could be the hunter. That's how I look at it.
Say the right things, and but now you got to go out and do it, right? Like, that's what we were saying with Jerome Tang, right, when he got hired, and his press conference was just off the charts when he came to K-State.
Ron Prince had great press conferences, too.
And so it's like you can say all the right things, but yeah, you got to go out and do it still. And that's ultimately going to be where he is judged, Yomark, and how the Big 12 responds to some of the things that have happened here, and if they can actually expand and take advantage of it. Like he says, you know, he sees an opportunity here. You got to take advantage of that opportunity now and actually do something with it, or else it doesn't mean anything, right? You actually have to go and do it. And I like his track record for doing these kind of things as far as being aggressive from a business standpoint.
All right, we'll switch. Nathan LaBarge is calling, so you might, I don't know, he's called here a couple times, we're on the air, so maybe you can give him a quick call, Dusty. Maybe there's some change to the race tonight, I don't know. But if you can call him right back, because he's trying to call while we're all three on the air, and it's hard for us to answer the phone when we're all on the air, of course. Let's shift to LIV Golf, or actually Tiger Woods. Let's shift to that, as Tiger getting ready for a major championship there, the British Open. Yesterday, he you know, people kind of wonder, what's Tiger Woods think about the LIV Golf situation? Yeah, let's go ahead. I'm going to just read you what Tiger said yesterday, for the most part here, about the players going to LIV Golf. He says, "I disagree with players going to LIV. I think that what they've done is they've turned their backs on what has allowed them to get to this position. Some players have never got a chance to even experience it. They've gone right from the amateur ranks right into that organization and never really got a chance to play out here and what it feels like to play a tour schedule or to play in some big events. And who knows what's going to happen in the near future with world ranking points. The criteria for entering major championships, the governing body is going to have to figure that out. Some of these players," and once again, this is Tiger Woods' words, not mine, "some of these players may not ever get a chance to play in major championships. That is a possibility. We don't know that for sure yet. It's up to all the major championship bodies to make that determination. But that is a possibility that some players will never, ever get a chance to play in a major championship, never get a chance to experience this right here, walk down the fairways at Augusta National. I just don't understand it. I understand what Jack and Arnold did, because playing professional golf at a tour level versus a club pro is different, and I understand that transition and that move and the recognition that a touring pro versus a club pro is. But what these players are doing for guaranteed money, what is the incentive to practice? What is the incentive to go out there and earn it in the dirt? You're just getting paid a lot of money up front and playing a few events and playing 54 holes. They're playing blaring music and have all these atmospheres that are different." Tiger goes on to say, "I can understand 54 holes is almost like a mandate when you get to the senior tour. The guys are a little bit older and a little more banged up. But when you're at this young age, and some of these kids, they really are kids, who have gone from amateur golf into that organization, 72-hole tests are part of it. We used to have 36-hole playoffs for major championships. That's how it used to be. 18-hole U.S. Open playoffs." Tiger concludes, "I just don't see how that move is positive in the long term for a lot of these players, especially if the LIV organization doesn't get world ranking points and the major championships change their criteria for entering the events. It would be sad to see some of these young kids never get a chance to experience it and experience what we've got a chance to experience and walk these hallowed grounds and play in these championships." That's Tiger Woods. So I think Tiger makes some interesting points, and I agree with most of what he has to say. I do understand people that will clap back at Tiger on this as well. And they'll say, well, this is easy for a guy that's made $1 billion.
Right.
That's the first reaction is, well, it's easy for Tiger to say that because he's got the $1 billion. So he don't need to go play LIV Golf. He's got all the money in the world. And I understand that argument to a point. But also, Phil Mickelson, of course, he gambles his money away. Maybe he does need a whole bunch of money with LIV Golf, but he shouldn't. Dustin Johnson doesn't need it. Dustin Johnson's won almost $100 million in his career. Does he really need to go LIV Golf? He could be on a PGA Tour and make a lot of money. You know, how much money is enough? And Tiger, with $1 billion, supposedly he has, you know, earned $1 billion in his career. you know, he could always try to get more, just like Dustin Johnson's getting more. Brooks Koepka's made good money. Phil Mickelson, we know, has made a ton of money over the years. And I think there's a couple of ifs that Tiger has in this whole equation. One, if the major championships would say, listen, you're not, I mean, you're playing these events, you're not getting any points, you're not eligible. That would be their roundabout way of saying, we're not letting you play because you don't have the criteria of the points. But we've said it before, why would a major championship keep the best golfers in the world out of their major championship? That doesn't seem to really make a lot of sense, especially if Tiger isn't one of the, I mean, if Tiger, listen, they can get away with it. If Tiger ends up getting back to the way he used to be, and I think we all know that ain't going to happen. Now, he might be challenging from time to time, maybe, who knows? But you can't count Tiger. He ain't going to play every event on the PGA Tour. He's going to play the majors if he's healthy. But if he's out of it after round one or two, then people's interest in the tournament goes by the wayside. It doesn't seem like people are super excited about some of the young players. And some of the young players are playing LIV Golf anyway. So it really, for the PGA Tour to be able to survive from the standpoint of, yeah, we don't want Brooks Koepka. We don't want Dustin Johnson. We don't want these guys, Bryson DeChambeau and Patrick Reed. No, no, no. You're not going to play in any of these majors. And the PGA Tour doesn't make the decision on all these majors, of course. It's the independent organization themselves. But let's say they all decide. The Masters, U.S. Open, the British, and all these. They say, you know what? That's great. Phil, you can play all the tournaments you want, but you're not getting any points. You're not eligible. Thus, you cannot play. You almost only, to me, the only way you can actually say that and keep people out and feel good about everything is that Tiger is one of the top dogs on the PGA Right. Tour and playing like it, at least for the four majors in particular. And there is no proof or evidence to show that that's going to happen again. It could. I think it's unlikely. He might have one major where he plays really well, and he won't make the cut in another. And we know he's getting older, and he's had the injuries from the car wreck and everything else. But to me, that's the only way the PGA Tour and these majors can actually feel confident to say stay away is because we got to put it all on Tiger. And listen, that's not a good bet right now. So to me, what the one big if, or there's a couple, but one in particular is Tiger says, well, you know, basically, what if these guys aren't allowed to play in major championships? They won't have that experience. I think he makes a good point. The young guys don't know what any of this is like. They're just jumping straight to automatic money. I think another great point Tiger makes is you don't have to do anything to earn your money now. I mean, Phil stunk. Phil Mickelson has stunk in the first few tournaments of LIV Golf. He stunk. You think he cares? He shouldn't. Because he's got $100 million or more guaranteed. Dustin Johnson don't need to play well. I mean, these guys got odd. We talked about the guy that finishes last in this thing gets $160,000-some. That's like an unbelievable 4 years of salary for some people in this country, if not more. So I agree with Tiger. What is the incentive? You know, the incentive is the major championships if you're a competitor in golf. The incentive is to win a LIV Golf tournament where there's no broadcast deal, where not a lot of people see it. That's, I mean, what's the incentive? It's like you're getting free money to play exhibitions, is I think what Tiger's basically trying to say, and he's right. But at the same time, how can you blame a guy? Let's put the political side part aside with the Saudi Arabia and their government, their prince, and all this other stuff. Because that is a big part of it, and I know people could say, well, listen, it's blood money and so forth, and they're selling out for the money. But as we said before, if somebody comes to you and says, I'm going to give you $50 million just to show up and play 15 tour events in LIV Golf, you don't have to even play all of them. You can play eight. Are you taking it? More than likely people are. So these guys that have taken it, he talks about amateurs, which is like winning the lottery here. We talked about the lottery earlier today on Waterside Wake Up. Or if it's a guy that struggled on the PGA Tour, like Pat Perez, who said, listen, I haven't been able to win consistently on the tour, but I can get this money to set up my family, my kids, my grandkids and my great-grandkids for the future. He goes, that's why I'm playing LIV Golf, and I don't have to play as many events, so my schedule's opened up more. Because, see, here's the thing. Brooks Koepka talked about, well, the schedule's easier, I don't play as many events. Well, Brooks Koepka didn't play a lot of events last year anyway, so he's full of crud, okay? But other guys that are trying to win so badly, even the Gary Woodland would be an example. You play more and more events, so your schedule is busier, okay? But you're trying to get good enough to where you become a Dustin Johnson. You become a Tiger Woods or a Phil Mickelson, to where you're so good that you don't have to play every tournament. You're good enough to show up just for the majors and a couple other tournaments, you know? It's like tennis, you know, Serena and Venus. They don't play every tournament. When they're prime, they didn't. They focused on the majors. It makes sense. But how can you not understand that if you're a player and you're told you get guaranteed money How is that? Like, it would not be hard to turn down. For Tiger, it's easier to turn down because he's made $1 billion. He wants to win major championships. That's important to him. If these other guys have never experienced it, as he said, then they don't even know what they're missing out on anyway. Mm-hmm. And they're then living it up on these gigantic... Have you seen the planes they're celebrating on and hanging out on from LIV Golf? They're living it up for free, basically. Except they get paid to do it. So that's, you know, that's even better, obviously. And so... Because I don't want to say there's a disconnect, but there's Tiger, and he's what? In his mid-40s, about my age, I believe. And then there's the young amateurs. They're saying, well, why would I? Why I can skip a whole step to make a ton of money. And think about that. How is that no different than high school skipping college to go pro in basketball? Mm-hmm. Or going pro overseas for a year so you don't have to go to college and take classes that you're not going to attend anyway? You know? I mean, you are skipping a step. When you can go from the from being drafted in college as a baseball player and you can skip AAA and go from AA to the bigs. Listen, if you're offered this opportunity, Jason Broadfoot's an outstanding pitcher, all right? I don't know if he is, but let's say he is. And, like, dude, you can go, we're going to sign you, but you can skip AAA. You can skip AAA. We're going to get you the bigs in 2 years. And another organization says, nah, man, you're going to have to work it out step by step, and we're going to ease you into it. What do you think a guy's going to choose?
I'm going to the majors.
I'm going to the majors as soon as I possibly can. So that's what's happening with these golfers going to LIV Golf. They're skipping a step. The young guys, the amateur guys that Tiger's talking about, they're skipping a step. Pat Perez, who's played on the tour before, he's already gone through it. And he's like, that's great and all. And he also knows right now, I can still go play in the majors. Okay, and that's the other big F here that Tiger has, is the majors. And I just don't see the major championships... Unless some golfer takes the PGA Tour by storm, or Tiger gets back to the way he once was, or can compete and be really good for a while, I just don't see how you can say, see you later, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson, we're going to play without you, and we'll show you. And they'll be like, eh, all right, I'll just keep cashing these checks from LIV Golf. I don't care.
Yeah.
I could see maybe the majors trying it once or a short term.
Possibly.
Or maybe not changing this rule in time to get anything done, and then some of these guys can't make it because of the rule. But if those TV ratings and those sponsorships come in light, they'll change the rule or get rid of it or whatever it is. They'll do that. There was one point, the 54 versus 72, you can maybe argue that's old man screaming at a cloud type thing. I see his point. You know, I would rather have your majors be 72 holes and stuff like that. But, that might be a difference of opinion.
I agree with Tiger on that as well, because not only are you getting paid more money, but now you don't have to even play as many tournaments, and you don't have to play as long of a tournament.
Right.
Three rounds instead of four.
Yeah. I would, you know, or if you wanted to make them different, maybe do the 54 hole for a weekly tournament and then 72 for a major. If you want to tweak some things there, that's fine. That might be just a difference of opinion there. But I do think he has the point of the, you know, when your game's not going well, you're a middle of the road golfer and your game's not going well, what is that super incentive to grind it out hour after hour on the range or on the putting green or whatever when you have this guaranteed money? And so that's just going to go into the quality of the game. That's going to go against the so, and that leads to maybe a Tiger or another person like Tiger just dominating the game, someone that's willing to do that, mm-hmm. whether they're just wired that way. I don't know, but you might see a dip in quality because you're just not going to be that motivated to get out there and do it.
What does the PGA Tour need for them to proceed and also the majors to say, the heck with you guys, enjoy your lavish beers and champagne on the big plains and play these events with Greg Norman, great. What does the PGA Tour need, and the majors in particular, to be able, aside from Tiger refining his youth, which I think we think is highly unlikely, and the answer to that for me is you need, and you think about any sport, the Yankees are hated. Why?
Because they win all the time.
Mm-hmm. The KU men's basketball is hated in the Big 12. Why? because they win the conference almost all the time. The Dodgers are hated because they're almost in the World Series all the time lately. You know, the Chiefs are hated because they're in four straight AFC title games around the country. They are already.
You know what? Obviously, the Warriors are hated.
Warriors are hated.
Win and win and win, right?
Right. Yep. Yep. So, you know what the PGA Tour needs and what the major championships need is they need a guy to dominate. They need a, they need Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas or somebody I'm not even thinking of, Xander Schauffele, whoever it may be. They need a guy to dominate. And I mean dominate. Like win two out of four majors, three out of four majors, and be on the have enough events to where they're dominating. They gotta be a Tiger like situation. And then, to me, that would create something because then all of a sudden these golfers who live golf say, you know what? I'm not considered the greatest golfer in the world. I want to go back and beat that guy head to head. And now maybe you draw some of them back in. And if you say, sorry, we don't need you, they might go, God, I really want to. I want the opportunity to beat that guy, but I can't because I'm over here and live golf. Now, maybe there's so much money involved, like nobody's ever going to care about that anyway. But to me, that's what the PGA Tour needs is, I know it's easy to say the next Tiger. I don't want to say the next Tiger, but they need a golfer to dominate. Because when it's just different guys you've never really heard of winning each week on the PGA Tour, that doesn't move the needle.
They need a guy to dominate, but they also need to
a rival.
Embrace the guy that dominates.
Yes, that too.
And remember when Brooks Koepka and Tiger Woods were fighting for a championship at a major and the story was Tiger? And I kept trying to say, this story needs to be Brooks Koepka because he's now won two of the last three majors.
Right.
And he won four majors in 2 years.
Yeah.
And then nobody ever embraced that part of it because Tiger was still playing. And we get stuck and we hold on to Tiger. Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. And this is why I feel like PGA's having half of their problems right now.
But we also talked at the time Brooks Koepka didn't have much of a personality either.
True.
At that time, he didn't.
But he was dominating.
Not everybody loved Tiger the beginning.
Let me revise what I said. Yeah. You want a guy dominate with a personality.
Yeah. But when a guy does dominate and you know your sport's not doing anything right now other than Tiger,
right,
you got to try to embrace that and maybe try to get that out of him, right? Like do something better with that when it's right there for you. And they've not done that. And Brooks Koepka obviously he's dealt with some injuries and things and hasn't been the same as he was from 2017 to 2019.
Right.
But it's just like that was for me. I'm just like, yeah, I understand Tiger's the story because he's Tiger, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, Brooks Koepka's on a dominant run right now.
He was.
And nobody was talking about it because Tiger finished right behind him and everybody was following Tiger. And I'm like, listen, that might be the story right now and that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the story. But if you want to sustain anything as an organization, I've been saying this for years. I'm not a PGA guy, so I don't have to look into all the deep inside runnings of how the PGA does things. I'm looking at the surface of if you want other guys to come in and be a part of this and enjoy your sport and pick it up, you got to embrace guys like that. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like they should have been doing that with Brooks Koepka, and they really didn't do it. And now you do, but you need to have somebody that's got, I guess you need to have a personality like Patrick Mahomes or somebody and then come dominate golf.
Because see, part of that equation, too, is like Brooks Koepka, I don't remember a whole bunch of businesses signing him up be their pitch man.
Right.
And that helps that, whether the PGA Tour is involved or not, that would help the PGA Tour, just like it would help baseball with Mike Trout and Ohtani and others. Because I think the PGA Tour and Major League Baseball are similar from this aspect, is that they don't market their players as well as they need to, especially if a guy gets on a roll. They don't. They're not very good at it. But at the same time, if, you know, Tim Duncan didn't have tons of endorsements. He was a star player.
Yeah.
And you could argue that the Spurs and the NBA didn't promote him as much as they should have. But the reason they didn't was that, one, Tim Duncan might not have wanted to do some of that stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. He was a more reserved guy. He wasn't flamboyant like a Kobe and a Jordan and a LeBron and other guys, but still just a great player. And so then it's like, well, is the public going to buy a guy that isn't going to be himself? Like, well, okay, he does this commercial, but that ain't Brooks Koepka. I've seen Brooks Koepka. That's not the real Brooks Koepka. It's got to be believable. Like, when Tiger's got an aura around him, always has, even when before he was even winning, he had an aura, of course. And we know there's an aura around LeBron and the greats. That happens. There's a once-in-lifetime generation talents. But Major League Baseball has superstars galore, but we don't see them promoting a whole bunch of products. Yet I got a tweet right here. Patrick Mahomes is in a new Coors Light commercial. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got to have some. You got to have the it factor. Tiger had it. Phil had it. Phil Mickelson had it for an extent. But golf's, besides those guys, who's the it factor? Like, Brooks Koepka, I agree with you. He dominated for a while, but even if he was in endorsements more and more, and if the PGA pushed him, were we really going to go, wow, Brooks Koepka is a guy I want to be like?
Right.
No, I don't think we would have. And maybe that's part of the problem is that because Dustin Johnson is a better golfer than Brooks Koepka. Okay, Dustin Johnson has done a heck of a lot in his career, and yet Dustin Johnson isn't on a whole bunch of endorsements that we see and commercials left and right, and we don't see the PGA Tour when he was playing on the tour pushing him either. So I could add to your argument, Dustin Johnson be another guy they could have promoted better.
Sure.
So the question is, the PGA Tour could push as much as they want, but if the personality isn't something that people buy into anyway. Or maybe it's a combination of they get the endorsement deals, now we, the public, buy into, oh, that guy looks kind of cool. I want to be like that guy. Well, I want to be like Mike. I mean, that was a great advertising campaign, Michael Jordan. That really took off after that. But you're right. The PGA Tour and Major League Baseball, they don't – there's something – there. I don't know if it's a disconnect, but there's just not the same marketing, the individual – and what's funny is golf's an individual sport.
Yeah.
So you would think golf would be better – at this than maybe other sports because they should be promoting individual players. And yet, for how many years have we been talking about Tiger and Phil? And Tiger and Phil haven't even been that good for a while. Phil won a major a couple years ago that surprised everybody. And I'll go one step further when it comes to, well, you know, living in the past. Tennis. Do you know the last time a Wimbledon champion... the first time the Wimbledon had a first time Wimbledon champion was 1997 or something like that.
Wow.
Or no, it's 2004. It was 18 years. Do you know that Roger Federer for the first time in 25 years isn't ranked? And and or it was maybe even the top. I don't know how it was. It was some crazy stat. And I'm like, dude, like I don't know whose American tennis players are great. I don't see them being promoted. That's an individual sport. Tennis isn't good. I mean, we know the Joker and Federer and Nadal. What happens when they're 50 and falling over and in a wheelchair? They got nobody there promoting. On the women's side, we can't even name any of these women that are playing if they're not American women. And even though even then, Coco Gauff, Sloane Stephens, they're not exactly well-known people. But, boy, we knew Venus Williams. We knew Serena. We knew Martina Navratilova. And we knew Chris Evert. They were on Wheaties boxes. They were in commercials together. Tennis, golf, and baseball seem to drop the ball when it comes to promoting their products. And part of that might have led to LIV Golf having an opportunity
absolutely
here to do what they did, because the only thing is they're not promoting many better, honestly. They don't have a TV deal for crying out loud. They're just throwing a whole bunch of money at them so they get some attention for themselves, whereas the National Football League and honestly the NBA does a really good job too of marketing themselves. But the NFL, once again, number one.
Golf, it's weird. Like, golf is the individual sport you think they would do better with endorsements. A lot of times, golf has the number one endorsed athlete at the time, but it's just one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Arnold Palmer. It's just Jack Nicklaus. It's just Tiger Woods.
And but if they struggle, then they're in trouble.
Yeah, and if they don't have that guy, then they struggle. If I was golf and I could just snap my fingers, you get five, and this is going to be a weird analogy, but I think it kind of works. Five 25-year-old kids that come up, it can be some type of rivalry, friendship, stuff like that. And as a fan, you're going to love one of them. You're going to hate another one of them. You're gonna want the guy that's the fifth one. You're going to root for him every once in a while to rise up and win. You're going to root for the one that steps up. You know, some people are going to root for the guy that steps up and dominates for a little bit, but they need like a group of five, and they almost had it with Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, and a couple of Justin Thomas. They almost had it there, but none of them really, you know, they all had their ups and downs with their career. But they need like a group of five. They need to be a little bit different personality-wise. They need like the country club buttoned up guy like Phil. They need one that might throw a club every once in a while. The NBA had it. They had Iverson. You either loved him or hated him. They had Kobe, who was the ultimate gym rat.
Well, you had Magic versus Larry.
Magic
Bird versus
Larry.
Magic. That was, and they played at the top level to win championships. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that in golf. You know, I'll tell you the opportunity they might have missed as well. You did have a rivalry going on. Two guys that don't like each other. Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
They had something going a little bit.
They just didn't win enough.
But they didn't win enough. That's the problem. You need them both to be winning enough.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Tiger and Phil, they at least were winning enough to where you at least felt like that was... And that's what you kind of need. Why? You need a yin to a yang. You need some kind of rival. You need somebody to push you, you know? And Jordan had various guys that kind of pushed him over his years, and LeBron's had some guys, and Kobe had some guys, and whatever else. But, you know, Mahomes and Brady, and now there's a whole bunch of quarterbacks that are pushing each other. Josh Allen's mentioning that, Joe Burrow, whatever else. But in golf, if Koepka and DeChambeau hasn't really won a ton, but if DeChambeau start winning, because Koepka has won, as you stated, and then DeChambeau started winning, those two don't like each other. At least they've showed it. There was a rivalry there. And all of a sudden, you have some altercation. I don't mean physical, but you start getting in some war of words, and you start, and they were jabbing each other on social media for a while, too. There was an opportunity, perhaps. And now they're both playing live golf.
Yeah, it's like they both went on to the other thing, like the hated thing by some of these people, right?
And right.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were doing, I mean, DeChambeau was, like, walking in front of Koepka during interviews and just messing around with him. And it was stupid, but it was something that people were looking at and paying attention to and kind of laughing at a little bit, too. Yeah, it's...
And that disappeared.
Yeah, it did, again, because they're not winning. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I've just never felt like golf has promoted the people that are winning because they're too worried about what Tiger's doing today.
And I think that's also, I think it goes hand in hand. I don't know which one leads the other, but I also think that's the way our society is because Tiger is a one name. You know, we know who Tiger is. We know who LeBron is. We know who Mike is.
Yeah.
When we say MJ, we know who it is. Kobe, you don't need the full name. You know, you say Brooks. Brooks Thompson, he played for Oklahoma State one time. Brooks, you know, you say Rory, yeah, that's a rare name. A rare name might help a little bit. You know, you say Bryson, I don't think you're thinking DeChambeau.
I'm thinking my nephew.
Yeah, right. So, you know, you say Justin, that doesn't do nothing.
No.
I mean, you know, Jordan, I mean, lots of people, well, Jordan, you think Michael Jordan, not Jordan Spieth. So I think that is part of it. It's a fascinating conversation because maybe golf doesn't have the ability because they don't have the right names, they don't have the right personalities, because golf is, you can't talk at all when you swing, but we can shoot baskets and people screaming at us shooting free throws, which now they're making all kinds of noise on the LIV Golf Tour. And, you know, golf's this whole proper thing. You can't address your ball in the wrong way or it's a penalty, or you've got to have a pace of play, or you got to be quiet. Nobody takes a picture, and we can't say bad things to each other. And actually, golf would be maybe better off if you did have a few golfers heckling each other.
Just a touch of pro wrestling.
Yes,
a little taste, a little boxing.
Press conference banter, you know, that's all a bunch of hooey, but at least it gets you, oh, those guys look like they're going to fight each other before the match actually happens. You know, NASCAR, they got guys fighting each other on pit road sometimes. Why you're punching a guy with a helmet, I still don't understand, but whatever. But the NFL, once again, they win this category again.
The NBA is at the top of this category as far as promoting individual guys, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because they've always done it, right? Like, it's always been a deal where I'm saying a worldwide thing, not just in this country, because I mean, how big the Dream Team was in 92. I mean, this is how long that's been going for NBA guys.
Right.
People know NBA guys worldwide.
Right. Well, and part of
the
that
NFL
is the
for
foreign
this country is
flavor.
Obviously getting more money based
right.
on it.
Yeah.
But as far as promoting individuals in a team game,
The difference of the NBA and NFL from this standpoint of what you're talking about is, though, you've got a flavor from all across the world. You've got guys from Germany, and
Luka,
and you've got Yao Ming was from China, and you have that's what makes that worldwide. And the Dream Team helped, obviously, kick that into gear. Dirk Nowitzki be another one, Manu Ginobili. The NFL doesn't have that broad there, but they have, when you think of sports and big-time figures, it's NBA, NFL guys.
Absolutely.
And that's it. You don't think of Major League. I don't think of Mike Trout right away. I don't think of Otani right away. I don't think of, you know, golf is only one name. It's Tiger. We know that. And it's still Jack and Arnold, believe it or not, after that. There's nobody else. Phil is kind of there, and that's it. You don't got nobody else of those four names in golf. Oh. NASCAR, I mean, you know, Jimmy Johnson.
And NASCAR's not even the same now.
Either, no, it's not.
There's so much parody. There's so much rules, and things are different than what they were back then.
Yep.
But it was Jeff Gordon, right, for
yeah,
forever.
Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt. Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt.
Even Junior had the clout because of his dad, right?
That's right.
Because Dale Earnhardt Sr. did so much that Junior just kind of – his name was there, and – it actually kind of probably stopped with Jimmy Johnson, I feel like, as far as that one driver that, you know, because Tony Stewart was already done by that. I mean, Tony Stewart was popular for a long time. And you just don't have – maybe in the circles it is. Somebody's maybe
sure.
like Chase Elliott or whatever. But you don't have it. Like, it's not ubiquitous like it was.
Yeah, like I think if you pulled a whole bunch of people today across the country, in different parts of the country, and you said – name the first athlete that comes to mind. It might be a guy that hasn't played for years. It'd be Michael Jordan or Tiger or LeBron. Will probably be the top three names. Mm-hmm. And then probably I would say, this is not scientific, but I would say those three names would be at the top of most. I would think Brady Mahomes would be right up there. And I think you would get to, you know, outside of Tiger in golf, I don't know how far you go down the line before you get to another golfer name. Major League Baseball, I don't know how far you would go until you get a Major League Baseball name. A NASCAR, I don't know how far you'd go before you get to a NASCAR driver. If you want to talk about current athletes, I think it would be harder. Maybe somebody be, you know, throwing out Dale Earnhardt or whatever. So it is interesting to look at the sports, how they market themselves, and there's no doubt that the NBA is more to end of, like, fans follow the team. They don't follow the teams. They follow the players. Like, wherever Carmelo went, I'm a Carmelo fan. Wherever LeBron goes, I'm a LeBron fan. The NFL, they're a little bit more specific team-oriented. Like, I'm a Chiefs fan or whatever. Now, there might be people that jumped on Chiefs bandwagon because they're a fan of Mahomes. Mahomes goes to Indianapolis when he's 35, and now you become a Colts fan. Maybe that's going to start happening in the NFL. There are two different dynamics, but there's no doubt that those two sports, the NBA and NFL, do a great job marketing their people. They're front and center on a lot of products, endorsement deals, and everything else. And they do a great job marketing their products. And that's where all these other sports we talk about really need to catch up. And I think getting back to golf, you're right. Not only has the PGA Tour not moved on from Tiger, but honestly, society hasn't moved on. I'll be honest. I'm one of those people.
I
don't tune in and watch. When Tiger's in contention, I watch. Okay, when he won a Masters again, I watched. When Phil was competing, I was like, whoa, what a story, I watched. But if you, and granted, true golf fans are going to say, well, you're not a true golf fan, and I'm probably not. But if I hear there's a two-player playoff between Billy Horschel and Max Homa for the Masters, I'm probably not tuning in. Mm-hmm. But if you tell me Tiger's involved, or you're going to tell me Phil's involved, after that, I'm not. And those guys are not getting any younger. Phil's 50-something. Tiger's in his mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not old. I'm not 80. I'm in my mid-40s, and nothing draws me to watching golf on TV. Now, maybe if I played more golf like I used to, maybe that's part of the equation. But there is no guy, no personality on the PGA Tour that makes me go, well, I got to tune in for that. And thus is part of the problem.
Yeah. There's a lot there. Like,
I don't tune in to live golf either, by the way.
Yeah, no, and right. nobody does.
Yeah. There's no big trophy to win anyway.
Yeah. Like when you bring up the tennis thing, though, it makes sense that people are still talking about Nadal and Djokovic
because they're
still dominant and they're still winning.
Yeah.
They've won the last two majors. Like,
yes.
Nadal won the French, Djokovic just won Wimbledon.
Right.
They're still winning. So we don't know about these kids underneath because they have not taken over yet.
Yeah.
In golf, other people have been winning for a long, long time,
yes.
other than Tiger and Phil.
Yes.
But that's still all we talk about.
That's right.
And if we get to a point where we're not really talking about Serena anymore because she lost right first round, the women. There's so much parity that nobody's really separated themselves. And I think a lot of that, too, is like where you're from, right? Like, all the people you mentioned were all American tennis players, like that we used to talk about all the time. Like,
right.
It's like, and so I think that's part of the problem in a sport like tennis is like if there's not an American at the top, nobody really cares here in this country,
yeah.
I feel like. And so that's kind of where we're at with PGA, but there's so many Americans that are doing good things in PGA and in golf as a whole that there should be more focus on. on it, I feel like.
I agree with you.
And in tennis, like, no, that's not happening because we don't know who the best American is because they've not played in a major final since 2009 and not won one since 2003.
That's right.
So that's why we don't know who the next great American tennis player is, because they're not doing it. They're not winning. Mm-hmm. There's a part of that that has to happen, and that's winning. I mean, you've got to put yourself in the position to get your name out there and for people to understand and know who you are. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew who Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi were because they were winning. John McEnroe, Jimmy Connors. You knew who those people were because they won. And if you don't win,
that's part of the equation.
Let Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Novak Djokovic continue to dominate your sport,
right,
then yeah, they're going to get all the pubs still. It's probably going to be annoying because no new people are coming in and winning, but somebody's got to take that over.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with golf, is people have taken that over.
And it hasn't really
played. PGA was close.
Yeah.
Well, they had guys. The only thing, I mean, they might still be just the normal PGA, but the PGA was close with it. Dustin Johnson would have his year. Jordan Spieth would have his year. Rory had his time. But except after they have those streaks of where they're the guy, it's not like they're coming back and then they're like the third or fifth or tenth best player. They're not even getting back up to the they're winning anything anymore. So there's no rivalry. There's just guys dominating for 6 months at a time.
Then
they go take this lavish vacation. And for them, as a person, it's better as a person. Because we saw what happened to Tiger. Tiger was wired different, and Tiger had some issues later, and both physical and emotional and stuff like that. And that might have been because Tiger was wired just different. But all these guys, you know, they dominate or they have a good stretch for a year, and then they take a step back, and it's probably better for their work-life balance and stuff like that, but it's not great for the game of golf because once they hit that peak, they never got it back, and then we never got that rivalry or that three or four group of kids together that really took the game by storm.
There's some great golfers out there, but it's just there, and maybe part of it's tied to the personality. A couple things before we go here. Taylor Fritz, if he beats Nadal in Wimbledon and then he moves on, that was the semis, right? If he wins
it's quarterfinals.
Let's say Taylor Fritz beats Nadal and then he beats the Joker in the final. That changes.
Absolutely.
Because now all of a sudden you got an American winning a major, and it's going to be, he's going to become a household name at least for a short period of time.
Yeah. I mean,
whether or not he's going to get a ton of endorsements.
Set the foundation.
Yes.
He's still got to take that and run with it when he does that.
Right. And so if he would have done that, that would be a whole different narrative. The other one with tennis would be, and it's not an American, and this doesn't have to be an American discussion. We're talking about the popularity of the sport and so forth and so on. But in particular here in America, to a point, Naomi Osaka was on her way to being that household name. She was.
Yeah.
And now we know all the problems, mental health and everything else, and she may never be.
But for a different reason, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same.
Yeah, but, right.
The back end of it didn't end up with where you would want to be that household name.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, when you say who's the face of women's tennis, there is nobody. If you say the face of men's tennis, it's honestly now it's Joker and Nadal because Federer's not even playing.
Yeah.
Eventually, somebody's going to have to take the torch. If you say who's the face of the PGA Tour, you know what everybody's still going to say? Tiger Woods.
And
he hasn't done much other than winning the Masters.
Yeah. Other than what he's done in his career, like who he is. And
right.
What he's done.
Whereas you say the NFL, you bring up many more names. NBA, many more names. Major League Baseball, not so much. So it is interesting how you handle and how, and it goes back to the Big 12, you know, with the commissioner saying, you know, we're going to be aggressive. The difference between being proactive and reactive. And I think there's something to your point that, you know, there were some, maybe a few times the PGA Tour could have grabbed something. Maybe NASCAR in some situations could have grabbed something. And either they tried to grab it and it just didn't catch on and we all missed it, or that we're not going to ever grab onto it no matter what they do. I don't know. But it is pretty crazy that, you know, Tiger's won one tournament in how many years? He won the Masters. I mean, he hasn't really done a lot. He's been hurt a lot and this and that and whatever else. And yet he is so revered and so respected. And it does feel like the only way you're going to get the massive ratings, which we saw when he won the Masters a few years ago, you need Tiger. Well, the PGA Tour existed before Tiger. And it got it blew up, and it just blew up big time in this country because of Tiger. But where does golf in general and the PGA Tour in particular go once Tiger doesn't even play anymore? Like, he's playing, but he's not at a level that he once was, as we know. And he might have those flashes from time to time. But what happens when there is no chance that Tiger's going to compete because he is completely retired? They better be having a game plan. The problem is, do the guys that win, are they guys that you gravitate towards? Do you relate to them? Are they marketable? Do they have a pizzazz, a little flamboyance, a little arrogance, a little cockiness? You know, Tiger fit all that. And it's hard to find people like that. At least it seems to be that way when it comes to golf. And it will be interesting to see what happens with LIV Golf and the PGA in the future. But Tiger's certainly making his thoughts known yesterday, and I thought they were controlled thoughts, and it made some sense. But I do understand somebody that wants to fire right back and say, easy for him to say, he has $1 billion in the bank.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.